Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hi.
And Brian Brushwood.
Oh, I was going to stay silent, but I realized that would be too awkward.
And no one would get it.
And nobody would get it because it was a reference to our false start. Yeah.
The jokes are a little too inside, even for us to get. So, gentlemen, we have an email. Now, those of you that are just tuning in are perhaps very forgetful about what the premise of the show is people send us questions or comments if they want about, hey, I'm doing this thing. What's the brain trust say? Oh, the brain trust not there. Can Brian, Andrew, and Justin tell me what they think? So we will give you our thoughts on this as people who are trying to make our way, hustling as creatives. And this comes from Cameron Mesmer. Hey, all. Sorry if it's long. I cut everything I could. We appreciate brevity is the soul of... Anyhow, magic business question for two awesome magicians and Andrew.
What?
No, I just added that part. And an awesome person. I am a 33-year-old performer in a small city, Billings, Montana, who does magic and a bit of sideshow, fire eating, etc., with as much comedy as I can fit in. Mostly kid shows because it's my bread and butter, but I definitely can and have done adult shows. I started out just doing birthday parties and traveling and doing every gig I could, but last year I opened up a private free play arcade party room where I add on my magic shows if they want. All fun and games room.com. It took off, and I've been doing the best I've ever done in any venture. It won't make me millions, but I don't need a normal job, and I work less than 10 hours a week. I want to fill out an application. My question is, where do I go from here? I mostly do shows on the weekends, so I have 4 to 5 days to do whatever I want, and it feels like I'm wasting my potential watching Netflix all day. Don't undersell yourself there. I want to do more with my performing and life in general, but now I've made a life where staying in a small area is making me money, and it feels so small. I've come up with my own tricks, routines, and variations I've thought of selling, but who knows if they're any good. I can't really focus on traveling for work or pleasure because I'm promoting myself in a specific area. Have I trapped myself from doing anything greater? Should I just shut up and enjoy long weekends? Basically, I feel like I need a side business to optimize my money-making ability, but normal side jobs would make me a fraction of what I could at my party business. The too long, didn't read it, is I'm a talented guy with a business I can support myself with and too much free time. What now? Meth.
I got a take on this, but I'd be real curious to hear Justin before I talk.
You know, I think what... What he's done is identify the fact that he's got a lot of time to do stuff. I don't know. I guess every road for him going forward now is defined by whether or not he wants to leave Billings, right? Like even to go to other towns in that region to either replicate his business model or do something else along those lines. You know, what reading between the lines in his email, he kind of, it sounds like to me, he is asking somebody to tell him to move out of his town.
I disagree. I think that may, for all I know, be the mindset that he's in, but I think the mistake, the trap that he's falling into is the belief that I think many of us want to believe that we have a narrative that makes sense to our lives. And that if we have certain assets, you know, when you play a video game and you pick up an item, that item is, you know, comes into play in the next 20 or 30 minutes or so on. We want to think that about our lives, but that's not necessarily the case. And I think, yes, if you want to believe that having a successful novelty brick and mortar business matters and has to factor into your plans for whatever's next, then yes, that is very complicated and that will limit you to sticking into Billings, Montana, and it will limit you to doing what you do now. I think that that's not something you need to decide is the case. I think that you could decide when you list your assets, yes, the existence of a business that's running itself kind of on autopilot, that is an extremely valuable thing that'll keep your lights on, and that frees you up to go out and become a beginner in some other aspect. To me, the real assets are you have experience in talking to people and to commanding attention and keeping things afloat. It happens to be in the form of a sideshow, stage show that you do from time to time, but it doesn't need to stay that way. If you could think about expanding your talents to any place, like, for example, the ability to command the attention of the audience of an audience is universal. Whether that's for sales presentations, for leadership seminars, for motivational talks, for college gigs, there's a billion different things that that can turn into. And you can decide to begin that journey that is vaguely, tangentially related to the life that brought you this successful big brick and mortar business. I guess that's what I'm saying. If you have the courage to decide to start at zero and to be a beginner, to be bad before you can be good, then there's no ending to where you can go and how big you can be and how much you could travel and how many people you can reach. And maybe you decide you want to be a beginner in podcasting. Maybe you decide you want to be a beginner in motivational speaking. Maybe you want to be a beginner in the college market. Maybe you want to be a beginner in something totally different from anything you've done. You now have that precious, precious launch pad to do any of those things, but you have to decide that you're comfortable being uncomfortable, that you're comfortable starting from zero again. And that's the difficult thing.
My question for Cameron is, what brings you enjoyment? You like magic. I've been looking through your website. I think very well done. I've been looking at the photos of your game room, and it's great. It does. It looks clean. It looks nice. It looks well laid out. You put a lot of thought into this. You've got a lot of taste, and I can see why it's a successful business for you, because I think a number of people who try these things don't realize it. You got to appeal to the moms. You got to appeal to that in the families when they go in there, that they feel like this is a nice, clean, wholesome place. That looks like what you've done. I've been looking at your show photos. You know, the dreaded magician. Cameron's got dreads. You look like a fun entertainer, a very, very, you know, with a great opportunity there. I think there are a couple opportunities in front of you, okay? And maybe both. I would say that you've probably thought about this. Do you want to create another fun room and go over to Bozeman? You know, do you want to create another fun room somewhere else? And do you want to replicate this and work on that aspect of it and say, okay, as the entrepreneur, you have the opportunity to take what you did here and build another one. It looks like you've got a very good formula because, you know, you're getting your pizza from outside, so you don't have to run a kitchen. You figured out you've got a very good sense of play, so you have a very good idea what's entertaining. There are a lot of skilled performers in Montana. I've met a number of them that you could work with. That's an opportunity to think about, like, maybe you create your own sort of franchise, not necessarily franchise, but create your own chain of these businesses and, you know, create them as standalone entities. So one, the success or failure of one or the other doesn't affect the other, other than being able to reinforce it. I would seriously consider that, because then it could be, hey, do you have to be the one performing, or are you comfortable just building up these really neat fun centers? You're kind of your own Chuck E. Cheese type environment. So that is one thing to consider. It's the entrepreneur path, is to take what worked here, because it looks like you've got really good instincts, very, very good instincts on what you did there. And it'd be interesting to see if you decided to replicate that and create a couple more and become, you know, the amusement kingpin of Montana. Another pathway, as Brian was addressing, is, you know, places you could take your magic. One of my favorite stories to talk about is from Bozeman, is Jay Owenhouse, and he's a guy that does probably at any, you know, at any given time is probably the largest magic touring show for a single performer, where he would have motorcycles and tigers and everything else, and he performed all throughout the Midwest. And you go, how is that possible? He's not performing in big amphitheaters. He built a show that could perform in high school gymnasiums. He would bring in the show, his rigging and everything, because every one of these small towns, they didn't have a theater, but they had a gymnasium. So he built an entire illusion show that could fit in there. He had, you know, people who were running phone banks for him to do call ahead in other towns and stuff. They would do benefit for like PBAs, associations, et cetera, like that. So portion of the proceeds would benefit a local charity so he could go into the town and be, it was like a traveling circus, but built into a gymnasium. That is another thing for you to think about. Do you want to scale the magic of what you do? I would think about maybe that's what you want to do, is build up a big show like that. They can tour gymnasiums and you could work your way throughout the Midwest, because they are starved for, they don't get Cirque du Soleil. They don't get the bigger forms of entertainment, but if you can entertain a couple hundred people a night, you can build a very lucrative business. So two paths. One is pursue building more of these fun rooms, because I think there's a need for that. And it looks like you've got a knack for that. Or as an entertainer, and from what I've seen, it looks like you're a fun and original performer. Perform that, and then look at the idea of, okay, I want to put together evening shows that go into the schools, that would be these school shows that would be benefit whatever. I mean, it's, you know, tie in with the local charity and do that.
By the way, can I just congratulate Cameron that you are already at level two, where normally our advice is, right? Normally it's, hey, I'm a magician. I've kind of screwed around a little bit, but I want to do something bigger and better. And normally our rambling advice would settle on crazy ideas like, hey, why don't you start a fun room where you can tack your show as an add-on and you can make persistent money even if you're not there performing. So you're already at like an awesome level. Like you've already outsmarted life to X degree, right? And I think you're in this kind of refractory period of trying to find out where else you want to grow.
Well, and actually, that's a really, really good point, because to me, that's the danger zone. When you have a certain level of success, it's very, very tempting to shift your focus to, well, I've made it, so I guess my new job is to hold this trophy as close to my chest as I can and hope nobody takes it away. And I think I've shared this story before, but you know, when I quit my day job, I was 24, 25 years old, and I wrote down this outrageous list of goals where it's like, hey man, I want to tour all around. I want to make a six-figure income. I want to, you know,
punch out Mike Tyson.
Yeah, exactly. And by the time I was 30, I discovered that list, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm a touring magician. I'm established in the college market. I've won a few awards. You know, it's great. And I guess I won. So I guess I just have to hope nobody takes it away from me. And it was the most depressed I had been in that decade. Like, once you shift to a mindset of scarcity, once you shift to, well, I've won and just nobody take it away. And I don't think I've talked about this on the show, but, you know, I'm kind of bummed. There's somebody very close to me who spends his full time just hoping nobody takes away his nest egg, and that's not a very satisfying way to exist, and it doesn't inspire you to wake up early and work extra hard, and that's where real joy comes from. Real joy doesn't come in spite of the work; it becomes because of the work. And what I would strongly encourage you to do is write down a list of insane goals. Every single one of them you write down has to seem insane at the moment you write it. And
become
yet close enough.
$1,000 Patreon of the Weird Things podcast.
Exactly, you know? Right? and yet the moment you write it down, go to work and start thinking, well, I mean, is it that insane? Seems like if I got this in 2 or 3 years, I'd be in this position and then maybe I could do blah, blah, blah. I think you will find a lot of joy in moving forward, or at least the illusion of moving forward, the sensation of moving forward.
And Cameron, you know, you cracked the code, and that is that people who are practical and put in work get things done. It's, you know, it's this amazing mystery of, you know, people like, how do you write a book? How, Brian, how'd you become a college performer? Justin, how do you become a successful podcaster? I don't know. Put in the work. Yeah. Be practical. Well, think about it.
Solve 1,000 tiny puzzles that get you, each one gets you just a little bit closer to the goal.
Yeah.
It's like, they're not tough. It's like 2 + blank = 5.
Three.
Right. But, so now solve that a million different times.
Well, and also go through the effort, because each one it's annoying. It's akin to you're speeding, and it's not like you get pulled over for a single $500 ticket. It's like you're speeding towards your goal and you get pulled over for 8,000 $1 tickets. And each one is slightly annoying. You're like, ah, I guess it was what it means to get close to my goal. All right. And you keep paying those dues. And before you know it, you realize you've, you know, made it a few hundred miles.
Yeah. So Cameron, like, I think that you know, Minchapur, like, there might be a tendency, people might say, oh, yeah, what's great, you should franchise that. And there certainly there's business opportunities in which you can do things like that, take something and franchise it. But then there's the problem is you're like, a lot of magicians would love to be able to do what you're doing, and they might pay to learn how to do it, but that becomes its own thing to try to do that. Where if you're looking to really create something cool that belongs to you and of yourself and not worried about other people ruining what you're trying to do, think about just the idea of opening up another one, and that would require finding somebody in another town capable of doing it. But if you're spending this few hours a week running this, it sounds like you've been pretty good at figuring out who to run these things right now. That is an option for you there. I really think that that could be interesting and neat to see that you're doing that.
And keep in mind, I assume all of this is assuming that this is what brings you joy is running mm-hmm. this stuff. It may be that – you know,
I think that's what Andrew said before, was that like, what makes you happy? The entrepreneur? If it's the entrepreneur, then look, you got a great business. Let's see how you can grow that business, right? If it's the performer, then figure out what the performer thing. That's Brian. What you were saying is your point was, okay, let's assume that what brings you joy is the performance. Then understand that it doesn't even have to be magic. You know, that you can do a million other different things because, number one, you were smart enough to start your own business. Number two, you have a great look and you're professional and you put the work in. Like, there's no reason why you can't go anywhere that involves somebody confidently talking to an audience.
So let me propose, and you guys can – I'd be curious to hear if you guys agree or disagree. I think there's only three health bars when it comes to being a magician. There's only three reasons people are a magician, and you want all three of these. You do it for money. You do it for fame, and you do it for relationships. to meet somebody. Those are the only things you care about. And as long
strongly
as
strongly disagree.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Why do people become magicians?
I think some people absolutely passionately love the art of magic. I think they love. They love, you know, like, why does somebody become a dancer? You know, why does somebody do that something that doesn't have those rewards? Because they feel very passionate about the thing itself. You know, I know actors that maybe it'd be nice if they became famous, but if you said, hey, we're going to go put on a play in the middle of nowhere for three people, do you want to go do it? They would love to go do it because they love the experience of the thing.
That's interesting because, yes, I agree that I certainly got excited about all those, but it was in service of moving forward on those other three goals. Like,
yeah,
I wanted
Brian,
to reach more people.
Did you go to Magic Live?
No.
I didn't go to Magic Live. Okay.
Okay.
Magic Live's big magic convention. There are a lot of people there who were stayed up all night
yes.
in hotel rooms.
And by the way, you guys both should have been at Magic Live because they apparently organized everybody who's been on the cover of Magic
Magazine. Yeah.
So and you two have both been on the cover of Magic Magazine.
Whoops.
So there were people there that's what they're absolutely passionate about. That's the thing. That they went 3 days with no 4 days, no sleep, because they just – I have friends that they just love
sure.
– and performing is sort of a sideline for them.
Okay,
so they love the experience of the new trick and figuring these things out and just the – anyhow.
Sure. No. Well, allow me to dial back my pronouncement because you are correct. Magic is a curious business in that people do it for different reasons. When I'm saying about like full-time professionals, people who want to make this their living, I think are fueled partly by the ego boost that comes from successfully entertaining and pulling off a good con and entertaining the masses. That's the ego side of thing. I think the money side is certainly not insubstantial because that's what allows them to keep the lights on and keep on doing it. You know, and outside of that, you know, the relationships that come from it. I guess, yeah, I don't know. Even as I'm saying it, it's kind of breaking down. But I don't know.
I think that for you, I think you diagnosed you and me pretty well, and that we love magic, but we also love the opportunities that are brought with it and the different things we can do.
Right.
You know, you and I'm saying you and I weren't there because, like, yeah, we like it, but we're, you know, hey, 5 a.m., let's learn a new tilt shift. Like, oh, that's, I got a good one. I'm good. I'm covered, guys.
Right.
Well, I mean, listen, I think as far as Cameron goes, you know, well, I would love for him to email back and just say, you know, but which direction he wants to go. Because I think that there's a lot that, you know, can be learned from him just saying, like, gun to your head, what would you do tomorrow if it were the last day on earth, would you, you know, be an entrepreneur? Would you be a performer? If you only had those choices, that's a very weird scenario.
Sure. But well,
let's say that's what it was. Cause I think that does so much for him to understand. And the other thing is just to enjoy, like, you know, what Brian was saying, this is a time to be enjoyed. This is the fun part. This is the Willy Wonka element of, you know, that people who are especially self-made people, independent business people, this is the great moment where you get to say, there's anything I can do. I met a dude at Gen Con who has had great success licensing and creating board games with licensed property, right? And so he's been great about talking to licensees and getting IP. And so one day he had this dream at like a Best Western or something for a Mega Man board game. And he was just describing to me in glee how excited he was that he had this dream. He woke up and wrote down all the rules. And within 2 years, he talked to everybody, talked to Capcom, and, you know, it was on sale. But like he gets enjoyment out of the production and the selling and the talking to distributors and the money. Like, he likes that. But the real, the awesome part, the fillet of that enjoyment was the idea that he could just have something in his head and then he could make it happen. Cameron's already done that twice. He's become a magician and he has come up with a business that helps him push that forward.
A Zelda-themed bathroom, Revelator, by the way.
What?
The Zelda-themed bathroom.
Nice.
Oh, dude. Listen, man, you're living the dream. So it's like if you want to know, hey, if you're bored of watching Netflix, like, check out what is playing now in the Netflix of your future. Like, you know, scroll through that and find out what you want to do. Because I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of people that you talk to in your life and they want to share ideas or share experiences, and you can kind of know almost immediately, well, just by the questions that are being asked, you're not serious.
So
Cameron is dead serious. You can tell it by the way he's writing it. You can tell it by what he's doing. What he just needs is a kick in the ass.
Yeah. To clarify my advice, I guess I'm going to make this more personal to make it more clear. I quit my day job in May of 1999. By 2004, I was touring 100 dates on the road, and I decided it was time to begin a new game. So I wrote a skeptical lecture, and the first few episodes, the first few performances were absolutely terrible. Took a long time for me to get my voice and figure it out. But within 2 or 3 years, I was doing 20 or 30 skeptical lectures. Around that time, I had a failed pilot, and I decided, oh, I have to get good at being in front of the camera. So I started up this series, Brian Brushwood on the Road. It was genuinely terrible. Nobody watched them. It was only 20, you know, we did 23 vignettes, but I learned how to talk and get better. And out of that, Scam School developed. And then once Scam School developed, I knew I wanted to get good at speaking extemporaneously on a microphone. So we started doing a BB Live show with Justin. And of course, I think it's fair to say, Justin, that those initial episodes, not great, not as polished as we've become on Night Attack.
Pretty safe. Pretty safe. Yeah.
So
pretty safe.
The theme is that it became important to me to begin a new journey and realize that each journey was going to begin with being bad all over again and learning to be good. And I'd say that even goes as far as like the TV projects. You know, I think that now if I had Hacking the System to start all over again, it would be much better. And in fact, it already is. It's called The Modern Rogue, and it's better than Hacking the System, and it's online right now. But that only happened because I had to learn a lot of storytelling elements, you know, being out in Los Angeles and so on. So it as long as you're comfortable learning from scratch again, I think that the world is your oyster. I think that you'll always have something new, bigger, and exciting. And if you don't mind the idea that you could spend 5 years getting good at something that ultimately may be dropped at the end of it, as long as you're comfortable with that, you get unlimited coupons, you get unlimited restarts, and you get unlimited development for the rest of your life.
Wonderful advice. My vote, Cameron, is you become the party and entertainment and amusement impresario of Montana, and then spread across.
Like a virus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you want to talk about natural advantages, putting together you know, a fun room in Billings and Bozeman is going to be cheaper than a lot of other cities. And they still got kids and they still get bored and they still have birthdays. So, you know, you are in a great place to do that. But no, email back, man. I'm excited to hear where you go.
In a side jag that we could probably talk about more on another episode is that there has been this big growth, you know, in LA. Like, you can't walk down the street without tripping into an escape room. That it's become bigger because people want to get outside, out of their houses, and do something. They want to get outside of their houses and do something besides just going to a movie theater or going to a restaurant,
right?
And shopping. And so the more stuff you come up with that can fit that in, and what works with escape rooms is, it doesn't cost $50,000 to build an escape room. You need an empty storefront, bunch of old crap, and some imagination. You can do that. And some of them are barely more than that. And what Cameron did here was he said, hey, I can rent a space. I don't have to have it staffed all day. I only staff it or run it myself when we have a party booked there. Otherwise, it's dormant. I'm not building an arcade that's going to have to, like, pay for somebody to be there all day. I can get space that's inexpensive enough, you know, because where my business is going to come through, it's not going to be walk-through. It's going to come from, you know, people finding me online and word of mouth. Brilliant. I worked when I was a teenager at some of these places like this, but they were much more expensive locations and stuff. They're counting on different things. I think, Cameron, you've got a great business model for what you're doing. I think you could expand that.
Heck yes.
Gentlemen.
Absolutely.
Any picks, any suggestions?
I'm reading this new audiobook. It's called Powerhouse. I'll probably make it my pick on Weird Things too. But I love, 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 love oral histories. I like the format in which the author really only is there to write little vignettes in between gigantic blocks of quotes. And one of the guys who does it better than anybody is James Andrew Miller. He did These Guys Have All the Fun, The Story of ESPN, Live from New York, The Story of Saturday Night Live. And his newest book, which I'm listening to right now, is Powerhouse, The Story of Creative Artists Agency, which just is a through line to so many amazing, awesome things that have happened in Hollywood over the past 30 years, so much of which I didn't even necessarily put together. But I'm right now in the midst of what became the Young Turks writers boom with Joe Esterhaus and Shane Black. And did you know, also, fun little trivia, that the original version of the script for Lethal Weapon was entitled The Nice Guys?
No kidding.
Yeah, which was Shane Black's movie that just came out this year. So I guess he finally got around to recycling that name. But yeah, no, totally great. Awesome story, just real quick to wet your whistle. There is a great story about Peter Sellers and how crazy he was, I mean, in general, but specifically on the set of the Pink Panther. And so Peter Sellers goes crazy and gets into a fight with a producer, fires his, you know, makes the call to his agent, I'm not going to show up to set if this producer shows back up. So they fire the producer. Producer comes back to LA. So Peter Sellers goes to the first day of shooting, hates the director. So he calls his agent back and says, why was I mad at the producer? This director's garbage. I'm not going back to set unless the producer's back on set in Paris tomorrow.
What?
So the agent goes to his assistant and says, hey, you got to find that producer and you got to get him back on a flight to Paris tomorrow. So he's on set tomorrow or you're fired. So the guy tracks down the producer. He's at a restaurant, calls him, and says, hey, listen, you got to drive to LAX right now because the last flight out is at 7. Producer's like, it's 7:45 or 6:45 right now. I'm never going to make it to LAX. I'm just going to get there tomorrow morning. He's like, no, you're going to get there. Leave right now. Don't worry. You're going to get on that flight. You already have a ticket. He's like, whatever. So the assistant goes to the basement, calls in to Air France a bomb threat on that flight.
What?
And the producer winds up getting to Paris on time.
That is amazing.
Just awesome, 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 legendary stories. So I love it. You know, the audiobook format for oral histories is not my favorite in the world. I kind of wish they would splurge for a little bit more of a cast, because it's always just one male voice and one female voice. But super great. Can't recommend it highly enough.
Cool. I got a recommendation that's totally self-serving, but I think is good, especially if you're somebody like it was Cameron who wrote us. Is that who it was?
Mm-hmm.
If you're somebody like Cameron, you want a bit of advice. If you think that I occasionally, as a broken clock, am right twice a day, then you can get 3 hours of me running my stupid mouth off with a Penguin Magic live lecture that I did a few weeks ago, just dropped this past week. If you go to penguinmagic.com, it's the craziest thing. I ended up just sort of explaining my entire stage show. Even if you're somebody who has a passing interest in magic and you want to know the thinking, some of the stuff I detail in precise nature of how everything is done. Other stuff I talk about the general theses that I'm working with. I've never done a magic lecture before, and I'm rather proud of it. I think it's pretty good. It's available right now. I think it's still it's $29.95, and it's 3 hours long. And if you are into that stuff, then I think you'll dig it.
I highly recommend. I think they've done a great job in putting these things together. To have, you know, if you're into magic and you're performing, to have Brian explain the inside stuff. There's so much stuff that there's just not the opportunity to go into in podcasts or any of the other things that he's done. This is really a great opportunity to have Brian explain the real insight into one effect. Is super, super, super worth it. To have Brian explain multiple stuff is fantastic. So you get so much more out of it. You get so much more out of these things than you think initially, because it's just, as a performer, you know, somebody can tell you one little insight, one little thing that can just change radically your entire show. So
yeah, people have said really nice things. The reviews have been very, very positive. A lot of 4 and 5 star reviews. So I'm very flattered and excited to get more feedback from you guys.
Brian, I give you 1,000,000 stars.
Oh my God, that's so many stars.
The whole galaxy.
You know, for my pick, play a little here for you.
You can't do Stranger Things again.
I can't do Stranger Things again?
No, he's going to do the soundtrack.
Darn tootin'. Stranger Things soundtrack has dropped.
Called it.
soundtrack.
It's really good, man.
By that Kyle shows. Dixon. It's great.
Stood up to a second viewing when we were out on vacation out in San Diego. The reason I couldn't join you guys last week, we rewatched the whole thing with Bonnie. It was a lot of fun.
Wait, the kids?
No, me and Bonnie.
Gotcha.
Yeah, a little bit extreme for the kids.
The last time I was that impressed with the soundtrack was the It Follows soundtrack, which was funny enough was that the game Reigns, which was one of my picks, was by Disaster. The soundtrack was by Disasterpiece, who also did the soundtrack for It Follows. So, small world. It's very cool.
Dude. Yeah, no. You know, been very, very. I think Stranger Things has gotten all the hype that it deserves. It was really exceptional.
Gentlemen, it's been after.
Hell yeah, it has.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.